Fargo Season 5, Episode 4, Insolubilia is over, but here on Post Show Recap, we are just getting started. My name is Grace. I am not Mike Bloom. Mike Bloom gallivanting across the United States this week, and LaTonya Starks also not able to join us. So I am not alone. I am joined by Austin. Austin, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. I heard there were going to be pancakes.
We can make some pancakes.
Can we make some pancakes?
Yeah.
No, I'm excited to be here. Fargo is one of my favorite shows of all time, and I'm really excited to chat about this really exciting season.
You can have pancakes when you cover when you get all that blood and mud off of you.
Oh, true. I did, not take enough time to really clean up, spruce up for this whole endeavor. So appreciate you putting up with my ritualistic garb here.
Yeah. I too am a big fan of Fargo. Obviously, we're covering it here on pushrecaps.com/Fargo, I believe is the URL where you could subscribe to the feed. Make sure you don't miss an episode. You can also just search Fargo Post Show Recaps in your podcatcher of choice. Austin, we are 4 episodes in, 3 weeks, because they dropped 2 episodes on that first premiere night. But what are you making of Fargo season 4 so far? Or season 5, sorry.
It's been really fun. I really enjoyed sort of the return to form. I think you guys might have even talked a little bit about the fact of the odd numbered seasons, which are the ones sort of set more in the modern day, very much strike the vibe of the film much more so than the couple diversions back into the past that we've done in seasons 2 and 4. But I've just really loved the pacing, the complexity of these characters. The particular tone and style of Fargo is just something that feels very unique and both a warm blanket, something very familiar to come back to every couple years with these seasons, but also increasingly wild and unexpected with the way that it turns and incorporates odd mythology and philosophy. And it's just really exciting setup here, and the characters I'm finding really fascinating. It's just been a really interesting start to the season, and it feels like we're kind of on the cusp of the real boiling point.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say about this show is that I feel like it's been boiling since episode 1. I feel like...
Well, I mean, that's true.
Yeah. I don't mean to slander your metaphor, because it's a good one, because I think that there's more to be ratcheted up. But I feel like that episode 1 is so tense, and there's this show, and I kind of loved being thrown into the action and not understanding why we're in the action. I think is a thing that not a ton of shows would choose to do. And then to leave us last week on sort of the cliffhanger of the double home invasion, and we immediately get that scene, at least one of them fully played out this week, the other one a little bit more subdued, if not as sort of nerve-wracking as that episode 1. But there's a lot happening. And I feel like while also not, I don't know that we fully understand, I don't know if we understand anybody's motivation other than Wayne and Gator to impress his father. And then I think the law of order to do everyone else. I'm I don't know what they're up to. And I'm really enjoying it as I think the tensions, even though they are high, can increase further. And, also will be provided with some more clarity about what happened with Nadine, as we now know her, and Roy Tillman, that has her so scared to talk to the police.
It's really interesting. I fully agree. It is very much we are on a simmer that is on the cusp of boiling. We have been the more we kind of add to this too, the higher the water gets towards the edge of the saucepan. It's there's not much room left to go before this is all going to boil over. I really thought we might kind of get more explosive repercussions this week with where we'd left off with the double invasion.
Yeah.
But I actually kind of like that that was subverted, and we're kind of waiting a little bit longer. We're sort of seeing that tension increase. We're seeing Dot's situation within her family getting more and more tense as this external threat is bearing down on her, and she's not acknowledging the full danger of it to the people closest to her. It, I think, puts it in a really interesting situation as we're heading into the back half of the season.
Yeah. Well, let me give a bit of a quick plot recap, and then we'll dive into the episode wherever the conversation takes us. So, bad things don't happen to good people, Dot says to Scotty. But Dot does make sure a lot of bad things happen to Gator and his goons as she fends them off, though it does come at the expense of Wayne being electrocuted and falling, or perhaps being pushed off the roof. And the house got fired too. Indira and Wit learn of the incident and try to follow up, but once again, Dot wants nothing to do with the cops. The FBI also seem to have learned of Dot's identity, that she's now, Nadine is now going under the name Dot, as well as the cops Lorraine also and Danish Graves sort of are also intrigued by what might be happening with Dot and Wayne. We do see Mulch enter the home and then later have a nice soak in the tub and spout off some words about that I mostly didn't understand about kings and the cost being death, life for life, me or you, and then asking his mother for pancakes. Finally, Roy returns to his home after he was mumbling on about the Midnight Man waiting for him with the serpent tongue, and then heads to the house to find that his children are safe and sound, but there is a symbol written over their bed. At the end of the episode, he goes to visit Joshua, the man that he had visited earlier, who was abusing his wife. And when the man sort of holds him at gunpoint, Roy gets the first shot and kills him. This seems to be a cover up for Mulch so that they can basically have the cops and the FBI not on their tail and can search for Mulch without the fear of the cops and the FBI on their back. Roy also tells the wife of this Joshua that she has a friend in Roy, and he heads off on his horse. That's basically where we end up. I would totally agree with you that I think I was expecting this episode to be, for there to be a lot more in this episode. I don't think it's a bad episode of the show, but I think it keeps us in the mystery longer than I thought, to the point that, like, I feel like two characters are like speaking basically nonsense, more Mulch than Roy, but they're sort of having these like epiphanies while they're sitting and listening. And so I don't know that we got a lot of answers in this episode. I don't know that we learn much new, but it is a fun episode, Austin, I think, to try and figure out, like, yeah, what is Mulch? What the hell is he talking about in the bathtub? And why does Dot not want anybody involved as yet another incident that nearly kills her husband occurs?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little hard to just weasel your way out of this one, but she's trying her best to keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
I mean, do we want to start there? Do we want to start with sort of this scene of the home invasion in the house and all the fallout with Dot and her family?
Yeah. I mean, so we basically get almost like, you know, a repeat of episode one, where Mulch and the guy who ends up with his head in the toilet end up like dying, where she's pretty effectively able to fend them off. Loved seeing the sledgehammer come into use. This one, I did feel like, I think the first one is so much more tense, but the big difference is that like Wayne and Scotty are not involved. And so this one, now that we know that Dot's pretty capable, I'm like less worried about her safety knowing how dangerous she might be. But then when you add Wayne and Scotty into the mix as being like fully involved in this whole thing, and the payoff to not just the sledgehammer, but also the electrical wiring being put at the windows and such. I thought it was a pretty effective opening to the show. I don't know. What do you make of this opening home invasion?
Yeah, I really liked it too. Like, similarly, like, you know, much like with episode one, like, we were seeing Dot's, you know, foreplanning, like, you know, quick thinking in episode one here, like, foreplanning things like putting the, you know, the baking tray, like, full of water in the oven to, like, set off the smoke alarm and kind of create distraction and confusion. You know, having, like, set the ladder in the laundry chute so that she can get from the basement up into the rest of the house and move around. You know, like, very, like, well-planned, well-coordinated from her perspective, but it all goes completely pear-shaped when you add in, you know, these other factors of the rest of her family that she obviously wants to prioritize, wants to make sure is safe, can't just be, like, collateral for her own getaway. But because of her choices of, like, keeping as much as she has from them, especially from Wayne, like, it creates a loose cannon that she can't account for. And understandably, Wayne is completely, like, out of his depth, confused, and even as she's telling him where she wants them to go to kind of keep up the maneuverability of her plan and sort of the safety of her plan, like, his panic, like, undoes it all, and they have to, you know, completely flee, and it creates an even bigger problem with him getting electrocuted and nearly killed.
When she just shoves him off the roof, it's like, so brutal.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. So we're going to then get two follow-up scenes, particularly one with Dot and Scotty, where Dot's going to say, this is where bad things don't happen to good people, but sometimes accidents happen. We have to lie. Scotty being like, yeah, he ran into the bushes when he was a zombie. Like, that's how, and, you know, just, you know, like daughter, like mother, I feel like in the scene where she's like picking up these skills that her mother has, obviously she's still a child. And I love Dot. I think Dot is just as a smidge of a spoiler. She doesn't have a ton of votes, but in the year end countdown, she's getting a lot of votes. We have best new character, which is one we did last year. And Dot has, you know, a couple of votes there. And I love her as a character. But I did come into the show thinking that she might be much more of a wholesome protagonist than she certainly turned out to be. And so this scene, and then the scene with Wayne, where she gaslights him, where she's like, no, no, that didn't happen. Like, you don't you remember you went to turn in the lights and then you got electrocuted? It's pretty, like, I don't know. She's obviously trying to, like, protect them from something. And so, Austin, I do feel like 4 episodes in, there's a lot more to go. 6 episodes left, so we're not even quite halfway. Do you have any theories on, you know, obviously Roy and Nadine were married, but to the extent that, like, it just feels like there has to be more, and maybe there's not, but this idea that he needed to get out of this relationship that obviously would be awful to be in. But I feel like, you know, it feels like there's one more sledgehammer to drop, you know, in terms of like something about Nadine's history that makes it more than just she left Roy, even if that was an awful situation, because that to me would say, why wouldn't you tell anybody? Like, you know, I needed to leave and I needed to start this new life. And so it feels like there has to be one more thing, I think, that is like, you know, shady background information about Dot when she was Nadine that sort of like fills in a little bit of the gaps here.
Yeah, I think we've got like some, like, I fully agree. Like, there's clearly something else here, like, for like the degree to which Dot's keeping keeping secrets, gaslighting her husband to make sure that that information isn't known, even like within her like closest family unit. Like, it'd be one thing like to be like, I don't want to like involve the law enforcement, especially given Roy's also involved in the law enforcement and not trusting that system.
And we see the FBI go like, we gotta like do that, and the judge is like, yeah, maybe not. Like, maybe that's too dangerous. So like the idea that like Nadine might have seen some of this stuff that were like, she does not trust that anybody can take down Roy. Fair enough, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but then it's the question like, well, why isn't she telling Wayne? And like, well, to a degree, like, we've also established like in episode 1, like, Wayne kept telling his mother about stuff that Dot clearly didn't want told. So like, can she trust him to keep quiet and not in his own like well-intentioned way tell the cops what she tells him, because he's concerned and doesn't really know how to handle it the way that she is. But, you know, this, I feel like there has to be something else here. And I think like the little seeds that we were getting like from that FBI scene about the fact that there are not just one, but 2 wives of Roy Tillman that have gone missing, that he has explicit ties to, you know, the most powerful militia in the Midwest, I think is the way they described it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and with Dot's very clear, like, awareness of, like, weaponry, of, like, home defense, of, like, all of these sorts of things. Like, was she more involved in that, like, militia space than we know at this point? Was she even an active member of that? Is she connected to, I think it was Odin, the guy who showed up wanting guns and everything from Roy a couple episodes ago? Like, is she more embroiled in that stuff before she made her break? And that's part of why she's unsure. Or is it just the manner in which she lived as Nadine? We don't obviously know like how much she kind of like was, you know, sort of fostered in that environment. But like, is it just a byproduct of growing up in that environment that she is like inherently distrustful of the law enforcement outside of that space? That she is inherently like I need to do it myself. We get Lorraine talking about, you know, Americans don't want a handout, they want to fix it themselves.
Right.
And is this very much like the way that Dot's been sort of raised in her ideology of like, I need to do this myself in order to be able to be safe and have control of the situation such that I can feel free and comfortable and safe?
Yeah, I think that there's certainly the chance that the idea, it's the cops, and then it's also Lorraine, who doesn't like her anyway, so there's no reason. In your point about Wayne is a really good one, in that, like, he's spilled the beans before. And so in terms of really the cops not wanting the cops involved, I do think there's, like, this other piece here where I hope it's more than this, but this idea that whatever she was involved with in the past might, you know, could potentially lead to her literally being arrested, or being, you know, having to, like, sort of pay for what she might have been involved in the past. And now that she doesn't have sort of the safety of being under Roy Tillman, because we see that that comes with a level of protection, that is the fear. But I'm like sort of just like desperately waiting to figure this one out. I believe it will come out on Friday, but we did sort of like mystery shows of 2023, and certainly was more focused on murder mysteries, but this is, you know, up there for me as like, this is so intriguing. I think Dot is such a fascinating character, and I so desperately want to know what the deal is with Nadine and why she left Roy. Yeah,
it's very intriguing.
Yeah, and you know, I like hate that I love Dot, and then the scene with Sky feels so bad, and she's like, you know, the kingdom of heaven will be our reward. It's a really brutal scene to watch and to keep rooting for Dot as she's like, you know, doing what she thinks she has to protect her daughter, but it's like, boy, this is a bad look. It's not great. Yeah,
like you know. It was such an interesting scene, because like there are points where like it feels very like naturally like motherly in terms of like the assurance, the like, you know, I think even things like, you know, I think she says something along the lines of like bad things don't happen to good people, and like kind of like trying to like, you know, assure and like imply like we're going to be okay, you know, we're ultimately good people, where, you know, the wicked walk in the shadow so that we can stay in the light, and that kind of thing. But the more like you kind of like interrogate like what she's saying, even aside from the outright lie of like, let's establish our alibi here, like the more it feels like it's like, is this really like Dot's perspective, or is this just Tillman-esque like doctrine that she is like spouting back off? Because again, like that's what she's familiar with, like deep in her past. That just sort of feels like a little bit off. Doesn't really feel like her. It feels like recounting something that she's been taught or told in the past, and maybe kind of believes and maybe kind of doesn't. It's very unclear exactly where she lies, to your point earlier of like, what is her real motivation here? We still don't really know all the pieces of the puzzle that make her her.
I also, the religion playing a role in season five here is something that I, you know, I didn't really have tapped into it earlier in the season. Really, we do get last week, obviously, the 500 year flashback, and that is inherently religious, the idea of like the sin eater, in which you are like literally eating the sin. I guess you're not literally eating the sins, you're metaphorically eating the sins of the wealthy.
Yeah, they taste like chicken.
Yeah, and I assume, you know, I do have a lot of like Munch's monologue here transcribed, which I think we'll get into, but you know, very obviously, like many times we've been seeing Roy sit in a church, and we know that Dot and Roy were, you know, there's also like a religious aspect to like the idea of marriage, right? Like, so you get married typically in a church by a priest, you know, they're the ones who like bless it, and that's who marries you. And so this idea, and so early on there was all this idea of like keeping your end of deals, like that's a big theme in episodes one and two, in terms of Roy being like, Nadine didn't keep her end of the deal. Obviously they want to kill Munch because he doesn't hold up his end of the deal, and he's trying to like renegotiate. Love Gator saying like, oh, she is a tiger at the end of the episode. It's very good. And then, and so I think it's really interesting. Like, we first see Roy this episode where he's talking about being at a crossroads and the serpent tongue, a very like religious, some religious imagery there as well. And going home, I was not able to do, I searched many reviews of this episode to see if I could figure out the symbol. I don't know if you have any luck? Yeah, no.
No luck whatsoever.
Yeah, super intrigued by that, but I just think, like, again, this idea that Dot is like using like the kingdom of heaven will be our reward, I wonder whether we're going to come into, it's going to play that, like, you know, I could certainly see a flashback scene where like basically he's telling all this information to Dot, and it just took her a really long time to realize, like, oh, that's you. You are the person who walks in the dark. I, like, you know, I'm the light and I need to leave. So I could certainly see, like, this, like, so interestingly, this person she's running from who is trying to kill her or kidnap her or whatever, bring her back. She is potentially, this is somebody who's given her this language that she then uses as she's is protecting her daughter. In maybe not, like, not that her and Scotty is equivalent to Roy and her, but it's just very intriguing to me. I would imagine we'll get more insight there.
Yeah, and I think it's very, like, telling that you know, we're dealing with these sort of stories of liars, essentially, of, like, covering up truth, like, and trying to, you know, as we kind of get played for a joke, like, create their own reality, like, right. Here, as Dot's trying to do. And, like, the episode is called Insolubilia, which is, you know, a term for, like, medieval theories trying to solve the liar's paradox, which is essentially the idea of, like, if you say you're a liar, then you can't be a liar because you'd be telling the truth that you were a liar. And so it kind of creates this paradox of, like, what is the purpose of lying? How does it relate? If you know someone is untruthful, then, like, can you really trust even the things that they are saying are truthful? Are they actually true or not? And it creates this whole paradox. And Insolubilia is this sort of, like, ways of trying to, like, resolve this, both sort of philosophically and in terms of logic. So I think it's really interesting that we're dealing with that so much this episode, in the way that Dot's just diving further into this, you know, web of not even lies, but just, like, denial.
Hey, as someone who's extremely stubborn, kind of hyper relatable content to watch Dot just be like, no, it's fine. Like, I don't know you. It's like, we've definitely met. You're like, in a very intense situation. He's like, nah, I don't think so. I think you're remembering wrong. Oh boy.
Yeah. I need to be with my husband. He's not here right now.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Let's talk about our cop duos. Mm. We actually have, like, a pair of cop pairs, in which we have Witfar and Indira, who are looking at the security footage of the gas station. They've kind of, like, paired up. I am super glad that the idea that they cannot get on the same page is not a drawn out story. It's so frustrating in shows where you're like, just call each other. So the fact that they're just like hanging out watching security footage after, like, the photo gets deleted a few episodes ago, I'm like, okay, this is good. I like this. But Indira has sort of an issue of her own that she has to deal with that is sort of looming over her head in the form of a debt collector. I was like, oh, she's going to have, like, you know, this awful medical debt. And it is awful medical debt, as, you know, neither of us are American. And so, like, yeah, I have a really good pun. Hold on. Unlike her husband, we don't have skin in the, no, just like her husband, we don't have skin in the, that's it, right? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. But horrifying.
Yeah, because he gets degloved, which if you want to Google it, you can, but it's disgusting. So just imagine what degloving might mean in the context of not having skin in the game. I think that's kind of, it's like, again, the dark comedy of Fargo. I'm like, oh, she's gonna have to have surgery, or she got in a car accident, or she had cancer. It's like, no, her husband had a degloving incident. It's so, like, it's just like, what a buffoon her husband is. I love it. But I did love the overlay of, like, Lorraine kind of, like, talking about it. And then we cut to, like, Lorraine deals in, like, debt financing. This is her, like, this is how they make money. And the way she's just spinning this thing where the guy's like, but you call them. You're the ones who, like, make them pay their debt. She's like, no, we offer solutions. I love this, like, whole back and forth. And definitely it's a thing to throw on the table for Indira that I think certainly feels like potential blackmail, potential, like, ways in which she is going to be used against her will because she's stuck in this unfortunate situation because of her idiotic golfing husband. Yeah.
Jeepers, freaking Lars. We haven't seen him since episode one, and I'm still still irate about that guy. But yeah, like, I think it was a really interesting, like, little, like, extra seed for her. Like, I liked what you guys were talking about on the podcast, about the fact, like, by comparison to previous seasons, like, our sort of central, like, law enforcement officers, like Indira and Whit, like, are much less, like, at the forefront of the story. But I do like this like little detail that we're getting about Indira. It ties really well into the things you were just talking about of like deals and what you owe, very explicitly, the ideas of debt and what that sort of forces you to do or puts you in a position to make decisions that are maybe against your better judgment. But what I really love about Indira is like, even though all of that is like looming over her, we're still seeing her do like very diligent, very driving work alongside Wit to like put the pieces together. But it's going to be very challenging for her because she has a very uncooperative victim here that she's trying to, you know, resolve. And I'm hopeful that they'll get around, they'll sort of solve it by the end of it. Most of the time, I think we kind of get a sense that the good cop, so to speak, in Fargo do tend to come out relatively on top, but not necessarily, you know, with their hands clean or with everything kind of resolving in their favor.
Two cops and two FBI agents feels like
not all of them are making it out.
yeah. So we also have these FBI agents who basically, so these two scenes, the one where we cut from Indira to Lorraine, where she's being interviewed about the family business. And then as the two FBI agents are trying to convince the judge to sign up on this order, I thought these are such commentaries on America, you know, of like, this is set in 2019, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the most modern season of Fargo we have. And so I talked about this, about how, like, my thing was, I actually wondered whether with Fargo this season, whether they were going, like, the reason to sort of have like Wit and Indira are there, but they're not these like central figures. And that's because I wonder whether there's a worry about like commentary on policing in America. And then last week, like, Lorraine is just like, well, yeah, you guys only police the others. And then we're free, right? So it's like, oh no, they're totally like leaning into it. And then we get these two scenes, which is like one where like Lorraine is like, it's very American to pay your debt. And then the judge being like, yeah, I'd rather like know that Roy Tillman is out there. And like the scariest part is like, who fills a power gap? Like, the chaos is a ladder theory. Like, you can't, until we know basically what would happen, that like there's nobody will fill that power void, it's worthless to basically go after Roy Tillman, which the FBI is like firmly disagree with. And obviously we'll keep like working to investigate it. But I just thought these two scenes that are almost back to back are really interesting, like commentaries on Americans, which as two non-Americans, let's chat about it.
People to break this down. Yeah, I really love that. Like, I love this of like positioning of this commentary of these like FBI agents who are clearly going to keep poking their nose into this now hobby of theirs, especially after they like find the connection back to Dot. And these, like, who is it here? Like, Joaquin and Meyer, like, they are definitely going to be collateral by the end of this. They are, do not feel like they are long for this world. But like, I think it's really notable that, you know, we've already established that Lorraine like doesn't want feds involved.
Yeah, I think much like Roy's nipple rings, these two are mostly for show. Yeah.
True.
Okay, so in between, I do really... Lorraine is easily one of the most hated characters I've ever seen on television. The scene where she comes in and she's talking to Dot about the fact that the house is on fire, and she's like, you set it on fire. And then the cops come in and they're like, Miss Lyons. And the way that she keeps being like, yes. And then they're like, no, the other Miss Lyons. And then when the cops come in, and they're like, we're here. And she's like, ah, great, you're here to arrest my daughter. My daughter-in-law or whatever. It's so funny. And they're like, no, we're just like, that's not really like how it works. Like, we probably have to like do an investigation. I just thought Lorraine, and the way she's like, I'll watch my granddaughter. Dot's like, can you please watch her? The Snickers for breakfast or whatever. Like, all of it. I thought it was so funny. I it's so dark comedy, but, and Lorraine is so hateable, but it's just working for me.
Yeah. Asking the nurse for like that they're waiting for service.
Oh yeah. And then she's like, get her fired. Call the board of directors. Yeah,
get her name, get her fired. Like, she's just such an absolute monster of a person. Like, I've seen like lots of like comparisons. Like, she's like Lucille Bluth in a like much less funny story here. It's like, absolutely, like, well, you know, it's a, you know, banana, what could it cost? $10? Like, $10. It's that kind of energy for sure. But like, I think she's a really interesting character to have in the mix here, because she is so like immovable. as a character. Like, there is, you know, no real, like, nuance. There is no empathy for this character. She is just an awful person. But that immovable object in this story here, where, you know, we've established, like, she doesn't want feds involved. Feds are coming in. She suspects that Dot is, you know, up to no good, but, like, is expecting not what is actually happening. Like, that confusion and complication on top of all of this, you know, the thematics around, you know, the debt that she, you know, takes, when we're dealing with so much of this story about, like, what's owed and what's deserved. Yeah. I'm really intrigued to see what her role will be in the long run. I'm not convinced that she's going to be one of the bodies that gets piled up throughout this season, but I think that she is going to cause a lot of problems by being this, like, very, like, staunch figure in our repertoire.
What I think is really interesting about this episode is that, like, as much as she's, like, she's, this is like, it's like when you're playing, like, a game of, like, Mafia, and you're the bad guy, and then you kind of, like, get, like removed from the game, even though you didn't do anything wrong. You're like, or, like, I don't know if you played, like, Among Us or any of these games. Like, I play with Puya sometimes, and, like, when you're the bad, and then someone will be like, oh, I think it was great, and then you get voted out, and you're like, but I know I'm bad, but I actually didn't do anything wrong. Like, this sucks.
Yeah.
So I feel like with the rain, she's like, she's right, but she's wrong. Like, she's right that Dot is, like, all of this mess that her son is being, like, wrapped up into is all Dot's fault. Like, we don't know how much empathy we can give to Dot for it happening. This is the thing that I feel like this is where I need that shoe to drop. But for the time being, like, she's pretty right that, like, she's not right that it's, like, a whole, you know, extortion attempt, but she's right that, like, Dot's putting both of her son and her granddaughter in physical danger. So, like, you know, she's kind of, and it's awful, and it's the way she's going about it. So that's what I find most interesting to think about her. And yeah, I think she is going to be this, like, you know, thorn in their side, is this, like, other, there's the cops, obviously, like, two groups of cops, like, who are seemingly on Dot's, like, tail and trying to figure out what's going on. Lorraine is also trying to figure that, and then interestingly doesn't want the cops involved. So kind of fun. You made a really good point. I want to talk about Ol' Munch, who's in the bathtub. Freedom is a potato. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But last week, there's the Sin Eater stuff, and there's the supernatural element to the show. And you made this, like, such an excellent point in the Discord that I would love for you to, like, tell the audience about, which is essentially why the supernatural works for you in a show that otherwise is, like, pretty grounded in reality.
Yeah, so what I really love, and this was kind of like epiphany moment for me watching the show last week, but, like, why do I, like, not get bothered by the show breaking its reality to kind of add in UFOs and ghosts and, like,
and the idea that Munch could be a 500-year-old Welsh.
Immortality. Like, why is this something that, like, that works for me? And the more I was sort of thinking about it, I was like, well, at the end of the day, like, the entire show, like, always begins with, like, four lines of text on the screen, the first of which is, like, this is a true story. And the key word there being story. Like, this is purported to be, like, something that really happened. This is purported to be a real occurrence. But the way that real occurrences get recounted, get collected, get mythologized, is through eyewitness accounts. And what is true to you as someone that was involved in an incident may be different to someone else who has a different version of the truth, a different reality, a different perspective. And so for me, when I'm looking at the supernatural in this space, and specifically with someone like Ol' Munch here, like, he may be a 500-year-old Sin Eater. He may just be a random person who spouts off, or he himself believes himself to be a reincarnated Sin Eater from Wales centuries ago. Doesn't matter. If Gator Tillman, has run into this guy who is terrifying, who's left blood on his, stepsister's walls, like, you know, is, like, left a knife in this, in his partner, like, if he thinks that this monstrous figure is a legend of the past,
the Midnight
then that's
Man.
His truth.
Yeah.
That's the Midnight Man. Like, then that is his truth. That is his story. And that is what we are collating here. You know, at the end of the day, this story is being told out of respect for the dead, exactly as it occurred, from the perspective of the people that are encountering it. And so, you know, if you know, in season two, Lou Solverson believes he saw a UFO over Sioux Falls, then that's what happened, regardless of whether it is actually the objective truth. And I think that is a really interesting, like, theme throughout all of Fargo, is like perspective and what people believe and believe to be true about themselves and others. And it's really coming to the fore this season with how much we're dealing with, like, the idea of, like, lies and, you know, the way that we tell our own story and say who we are, you know, purport things, manipulate others into believing things. Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about, like, the scene at the end with Roy that I think has some really interesting parallels to what we got with Doc this episode as well. But in terms of the supernatural, like, it's all just about, like, what people believe. And so it doesn't matter if it actually is real or actually happened, if that's what people believe happened.
I love that so much. It's such a good explanation for why there can be supernatural elements in the show more than just, like, I don't know, because that's the show it is, you know? This idea of this thing that as you said, we see it every single episode. This is based on a true story. And the idea, and also, I look back to see, like, oh, does Peggy die in season two? Because then we can be like, the things that have not been changed are the things that people who, right? Because it's like, out of respect for the dead, everything else is exactly how it
told happened. Exactly as it occurred. Yeah.
But now I'm like, maybe now I'd be interested as the opposite, because Peggy does live, I believe, at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see if, like, and then the reason why things, you know, anyway, I guess it doesn't
like where the untold stories, like, exist, like, are those the ones that are more mythologized or more, like, you know, why, like, some of the characters that die are either, like, really perfect really awful and kind of, like, get exaggerated, and that kind of, like, is the show itself, like, monitoring that meta, or are we just kind of playing in, like, the patchwork of, you know, all of these eyewitness accounts being put together, and then on top of it, we're then telling a story about it, and so it's going to be further a sort of exaggerated, extrapolated, told, even if it is exactly as it occurred.
Yeah, so I love that. So Munch is in the bathtub, and he goes on this, like, spiel about, basically, the thesis of this, as I understand it, is, like, kings want to own everything and can basically change the rules to make sure that they own everything, right? And that if they can't own anything, then, like, their freedom is limited. Like, they've been, you know, they've been anointed by God. And that their freedom should be free, that it shouldn't have cost, but actually there is a cost, and it's always death. And that it's a life for a life. And so this was just me or you, and this is where he looks at his mom, but this feels like him saying, like, Munch saying, like, it's you or me, right? Like, one of us is done. You owe me. I know, like, as long as I am alive, I will not, as long as you're alive, like, I won't get paid. And as long, you know, whatever the deal is here. But some, like, philosophizing about kings here from old Munch in the bathtub. He's not doing a very good job of cleaning himself off, I must admit, but
it's clearly not the purpose here in this particular moist repose.
And I just say, this is so much about ownership too, right? Everything they want, they call their own. They just say, if they want it, they say, well, that's mine. It's my property. I'm a king. So I get it. And you don't get it because I'm the king. So we're back into, like, deals and ownership and, you know, your end of the bargain.
And it's so, like, clearly, like, ties back to, like, you know, this, like, you know, mythology of, like, the Sin Eater stuff, like, the medieval sort of era of, you know, like, you know, that freedom for, like, the poor at the time was a potato, like, you know, but now, everyone can be a king because everyone has much more, everyone wants much more, and so it creates much more conflict because now it's not as easy as just one person saying, hey, that's mine, I want that. But if other people put claim to it, now there is conflict, and now there is, like, a, you know, attention there. It's all, like, very disorienting, very confusing. I feel like
it's hard to hear.
It's hard to hear.
Yeah, I'm, like, rewinding this. I'm like, give me the closed captions.
But it's intentionally, like, alienating, right? Like, as you're getting, like, the, like, with you, when you get the cuts, like, he's actually talking to quote-unquote mother, who I'm convinced, like, is just, like, a random woman whose house he's just, like, taken up.
What do you want in. Why are you here? Pancakes. Did you notice Gator calls Nadine mama? at least once.
I did notice that.
Yeah, so motherhood again. Yeah, I think a theme here. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, still not convinced that like he is that she is actually like
no
blood
I don't.
Related to him yeah. by no. any stretch. They seem no. too familiar with each other and too similar in age, I think. But nevertheless, yeah, like with Munch, like I think he's intentionally being positioned like more and more as this just like force of nature, like that you don't understand, you can't really comprehend. Like, okay, he's like wandering into someone's house, like leaving some sort of pagan symbol in blood over the on the walls of like these two twin daughters. Like, you know, he's clearly like a dangerous figure that makes no sense. And that's also something like that Fargo has also played around with a lot as well. Like, even going back to someone like Lauren Malvo was very much positioned as this like force of nature, this like animal, this like bestial force of like hunger and death.
Lauren Malvo was the one was my comp for him. Like, I feel like he's just like quintessential season one, like Lauren Malvo, this like pretty evil man who just like will do anything. Munch feels very much in that vein.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing here is that like Munch by comparison is like the threat to like probably if we're sort of like ranking all of our characters here, like our biggest villain is probably Tillman. Like it is probably Roy, but like Munch is an antagonist to him. And so there is a potential here that Munch and Dot end up in a position where they are aligned or working towards the same goals, or they get in each other's way because everyone is wanting the same things, but are each individually wanting it to be theirs. And I think this could very much be a story of like where there's all of these pieces of the puzzle that could have resolved the situation, you know, with much less bloodshed, but because everyone's coming at it from their own individual angles, that's what creates the problems and the ultimate like falling apart of this story.
All right, so then we get this last final scene where Roy's going to go to Joshua, the man that he had like threatened earlier and told Joshua's wife to make sure you take care of him. It's like this is the check-in. The scene, again, I think like there's two big themes out of this episode where I feel like there is the continuation of the like the deal and an ownership and like what you owe. And then there's this like piece that's like fully again a huge critique of America where it's like he's like, did you know that my grandfather was named Roy? It's an awful name and I don't really want to say it, but essentially the idea that he had killed many indigenous people and that he lost here and he earned 4 Medal of Honors, and that's how America celebrated a man who killed indigenous people of the land. Roy literally says he was one of the good ones, and that he then will call Joshua like, you're not, you're a waste of skin, you're defective. And then we get sort of this standoff where Roy ends up coming out up front. He calls Joshua a paper airplane in the rain is what he does. And then we learn that like part of this might be a little bit of a setup, where like I love that Roy is like knows for sure that Gator did not bring the team. It's like at the work, huh? Like, okay, yeah, I kind of figured. And then this idea that this is basically they can imply that this man is the man who killed Gator's partner, and so that they can like get the heat off of them a bit as they continue to try and find old Munch. So and then he rides off in the sunset. Yeah.
Yeah, like it was a really interesting like scene. Like, you know, the more we see of Roy, like the more like terrifying he becomes, just in terms of his coldness, his you know, quiet sort of control and power in his in the way that he speaks. You know, the way that this like whole thing like sort of ended with his like conversation with Lenore and being like, you know, it's like the, you know, what happened here? It's like, you know, he came home like, you know, ranting about, you know, boasting about like killing a state trooper, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, you know, and like, you're a friend now. And like the Tillmans like look out for their friends. And just like, there was just something about like that whole, like just recontextualizing of what the truth is. Like obviously for Roy, it's a very active thing to cover up and like get the feds off their tail and give him room to do his own thing. But like it still like had just enough resonance to like the aftermath that we saw with Dot in the hospital with both Scotty and Wayne of like no, this is what happened. Like, this is the reality that we are working with. This is how things transpired, like in a way that benefits me, even at the cost of you. And obviously, like, it's much more like sinister with Roy as he's like standing over the body of, you know, to be fair, an abusive husband. But like, nevertheless, like this like very intense, like scene of violence. But yeah, there was just like an interesting parallel there, I thought, between these two characters that are like diametrically opposed in terms of our investment in them.
Yeah. Yeah, the other piece too is like, yeah, as you said, that like Roy here gets scarier and scarier. He also has never been mad. Like, he's like clearly like frustrated with Gator, but he's not even like, he's not even mad. Like, he doesn't, he never, it's such an interesting villain arc of like this guy who's pretty calm and collected the entire time. And it's all these like other stuff that's happening, but even that doesn't seem to like bother him that much. It's a man who feels like, I don't know, I guess it comes back to this thing of like what he's owed, that he feels like I'm not going to get got by the Midnight Man. Like I'm impervious to all this. I'm invincible. Like I do not deserve to die. And this, but like, he's very close to getting shot by Joshua. And obviously he's like a better gunman than that guy. And he can like read him and he wins the duel. But like, that guy has a gun pointed right at him, and you know, luckily it's like skill, I guess. So, yeah, I think I really think that, you know, it's interesting that this is where we end the episode on this sort of like spiel from Roy about what it means, like who's a good man and who's not. And then killing him to cover up this piece that, you know, doesn't seem like when the FBI come to his house that they're like worried about old Munch. Like, it's more that he's like not doing all this other stuff, although maybe he can't stop that other stuff. You know, we talked about, we name dropped Odin. I think I could see Odin coming back into play in terms of like as the FBI is like actively knows that like the militia is such a force that he has, and if the season is going to continue to be very actiony, you know, in terms of like shootouts and fights and things, I could definitely see the militia and Odin being involved. But yeah, this idea of like, you know, and I love like, yeah, Gator gets in his car, but Roy rides a horse away from this house. And it's just like such an old school, I don't know, I'm just like I am pretty fascinated by John Hamm and this Roy of Roy in this role of Roy Tillman, and this is where we end when in the episode, and the way that he's like, you know, you're my friend now. Like, I'll help you. Like, money in your pocket, no more black guys. Like, you're okay. Which is basically, don't go to the cops and tell them I killed your husband.
Yeah.
Right. So
now you owe me.
You owe me. You just killed your husband and you owe me. And I know that guy is like, that guy sucks. But yeah, this woman should be free, not stuck, not like debt transferred from one man to another.
Yep. Yeah. It's all like very, yeah, it's like, there's just like so much like resonance to that concept of this, like, character, especially like the way that he manipulates the situation, way he holds power in this town. Like, you can see how he's accumulated this power, especially given we also know like that it's generational as well. Like, this isn't like a self-made man, as much as he probably would tout that he is. Like, he has been like in this position, you know, generationally. Like, his father, his father's father have been the sheriff of this area. So like, he's just someone that is like understandably like mythological, like in sort of the spaces, or like you can feel like the weight of him even when he's not in the room as people are talking about him. And yeah, I'm really intrigued. I'm really excited to see where his trajectory goes. And yeah, he much like Arrayne, like a force to be reckoned with in his own way. And I don't know that we'll see that mask slip and see him be anything other than what we've already observed.
I also love that he doesn't really do any, well, I guess he does in this episode. I guess this is the first time he's really doing the work, right? Everything else he's been saying later, but I guess we do finally see him do it. But he's never, you know, in that situation, like, it's not like Joshua is an incredibly, you know, by the point of like holding a gun at him and being the one to lose in a duel, he's clearly not the most, like, you know, competent man. So the idea when when Roy will come up against somebody who is competent, either in the form of Munch or Dot or somebody else, I think is intriguing. I just want, because I'm reading through my notes, I do, my favorite line of the episode might be, I'd like to talk to the head of the department, to which Dot replies, which department? It's very good. It's very good.
Yeah. It's so great. The writing this season has been like incredible. Like, things like, you know, Dot calling Wayne clumsical. Like, it's just, it's beautiful. It's beautifully written, like this season, yeah. As much as Fargo is.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that is episode 4. Unless there's anything else you have in your notes, Austin, that you want to.
I don't think so. It was. It was a very much like a. You know, we're moving pieces around the board, but that's so much of what makes Fargo interesting. I think is like all of the connections between the characters, the way that they intersect, often like unexpectedly, and so you know we need to sort of build up the web further. So I'm excited to see where we go.
Yeah. I do think this is probably the weakest episode so far. I think that one and two are really hard for me to like separate and pull apart. Episode 1 is really strong in retrospect, but I kind of just feel like all of the stuff that happened in week 1 blends together. Week 2, we get the incredible like flashback scene, and I really loved it. And the cliffhanger, and then I don't know that the cliff like this like lived up to like the cliffhanger. It's still a great episode of television. I just think that this one. It's not wheel spinny because I think there's so much to dive into, mm-hmm. like debt and owing and the religious stuff and motherhood and all of this stuff. It's like it's in here. I just like the downfall of a show that like airs once a week. I'm like, oh my god, I need to watch the next episode. Where like a lot of the shows I podcast right now, I'd be like, okay, we finished recording. I'm gonna go watch the next one right now because I have it available to me. And that's not the case for the show, which is such a good thing. But I'm also like, it will be tough if next week if like. We don't get some morsel of like a mystery answered or like progressed, I think. Yeah. And that's not like, that doesn't mean the show's bad. It's just like, I'm an impatient television watcher who's stubborn, as we mentioned earlier. Yeah.
I do feel like we often do kind of get like sort of big pivoting points around like episode 5 or 6 in Fargo historically. I know like in season 1, that's where like we lose like, you know, like numbers like kind of goes out like unexpectedly. We kind of like pivot a lot of the story as, you know, big characters like bite the bullet or kind of get put into really like significant compromising situations. And with a pretty large cast here, like I wouldn't be surprised if we've got some like significant bloodshed in like the next week or two and some like movement on sort of the mystery. I think Dot's in a really tough spot. I feel like it's going to be hard to just like completely like sideswipe her out of getting questioned by Indira and Whit.
I feel like what's interesting is the way that Dot has potentially set herself up to be pretty insulated from Roy. Mm. And it's not because she's like willing to work with the police. It's actually because she's actively working against them. So the fact that they're all like seemingly the FBI, like where we leave off, is like they're going to go try to talk to Dot. And so like, again, if like the anybody from Roy's crew shows up, presumably like there's FBI agents there now, right? So the idea that she's sort of like insulated, maybe not like, you know, in a way that she's like actively working with them, but she is kind of like insulated because they're so intrigued. But like, if she said like, yeah, it was a home invasion and can you find the people who did this? They would be elsewhere looking for her. But now because like they don't have any information, they're like in her orbit because they need to figure out like, this is so weird. So that's kind of fun. And I think very dangerous for many. Like,
characters. I mean, they're the electric wire around her. Like, intentionally or unintentionally, she's like they're the stopping power. Like for the home defense.
Yeah. So fun. Thanks for coming on and talking about the episode, Austin.
Thanks for having me.
While the cats are away, the tiger will play. Is that right? I don't know if that's right. I guess tigers are cats. So I don't know.
It's not quite working.
Okay. It's not as good as skin in the game. It's not as good as skin in the game or you know, a nipple ring joke. What else are you up to? Where can people find you?
You can find me on social media at Austin F. Smith or Austin F. Smith 8. You can find me in the archives of post-show recaps talking about a number of different shows. Grace and I covered Foundation that long ago with DM Philly, which was a wonderful sci-fi show. Very, very different vibe, but great conversations there. Covered Shrinking, Outer Range, Jedi Survivor, all manner of things if you want to hear more of my voice in the post-show recaps archives.
Yeah, it's a fun time of year where I do think, like, I do wonder whether people are going back because people will see, like, year-end lists. I know I'm doing this where, like, specifically for PSR's year-end list, I'm, like, making sure, like, oh, well, I haven't seen that one. So maybe I'll, like, check that out as I have a little bit of time over the holidays. So people do. There's some great companion pods for the shows that Austin has covered, as well as the rest of the shows here in Potion Recaps. I'm currently talking about, in addition to Fargo, I'm talking about The Curse with Dr. Amanda. I'm talking about The Crown with Shannon and Gus. Movies each week with Ariel. This past week, we talked about Renaissance, the Beyonce film, with Matt Scott, which I thought was a 5-star movie. I thought it was amazing. And then full spoiler recaps with Jess Sterling. We're talking about a different movie. Awesome. We actually talked about an Australian show last week, Calling from Accounts, which it's airing in it got added to American Paramount Plus, and they were like promoting it as like watch it in America. So we covered it. I liked it a lot. And season 2, I think, is coming not too much
longer. That's what I heard.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. You can follow me on social media at @HyphenGrace. We will be back next week to talk about another episode of Fargo. So until then, bye-bye.